called Peter Whimsy. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter, with Alan Cuthbertson as Robert Fentiman, and Gabriel Wolfe as Inspector Parker. The Unpleasantness at the Bologna Club by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted in 6 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 4, Exhumation. Lord Peter Whimsy has discovered that after General Fentiman died on November the 10th, his body was concealed in the Bologna Club until the following day. He's thus effectively disproved the existence of the Mr. Oliver, who Robert Fentiman claimed was with his grandfather that night. The morning after making this discovery, however, Whimsy learns that Robert Fentiman has disappeared.
Now, Merbles, take a seat and calm down.
Thank you, Lord Peter, thank you.
Major Fentiman is possibly not fleeing from justice after all.
Indeed.
No. Since you telephoned me from Richmond earlier, I believe I've discovered where he's gone. And I think it will probably surprise you as much as it surprised me. Now, just listen to this. It's a letter from my sleuth, from Sleuths Incorporated, the bloke who followed Fentiman to Southampton. And he writes from Paris as follows. My lord, while making a few inquiries at Southampton, pursuant to the investigation with which your lordship entrusted me, what marvellous English these fellows write, don't they? I came almost accidentally... Almost. I think that's very good.
Yes.
Upon a trifling clue which led me to suppose that the party whom I was instructed by your lordship to keep under observation, he means Fentiman, had been less in error than we thought. In short, thank God for that, eh? I believe that I have myself come upon the track of O. You know, these fellows are amazingly cautious, what? I mean, you might just as well write Oliver and have done with it.
Oliver?
Mm. Yes, but now just let me finish, Merbles, let me finish. And have followed the individual in question to this place. Now, I have telegraphed to the gentleman, your friend, that's Fentiman again, to join me immediately with a view to identifying the party. And I will, of course, duly acquaint your lordship with any further developments in the case. Yours, etc., Jas Tomlinson.
But, Lord Peter, surely the man must be mistaken.
Well, I jolly well hope so, yes. It'll be a bit galling to have Oliver turn up just when we've proved so conclusively that he don't exist, hmm? Meanwhile, Fentiman's clearly popped over to France. Probably took the 10:30 boat from Folkestone. I don't know how we're going to get hold of him now.
Lord Peter, we must send someone to Paris immediately in search of them.
Why?
To fetch Major Fentiman back, of course.
But look here, Burbles, if there really is an Oliver, after all, it rather upsets our calculations, don't it?
Yes, it does. But even if this latest development should eventually exonerate Robert Fentiman in the matter of the attempted fraud, I cannot see that it will affect our conclusions as to the hour of the general's death. There's therefore no need for his body to be exhumed, far less for all the unpleasantness such a business may give rise to. We must accordingly stop the exhumation at once, and Major Fentiman's signature is required to do so.
Oh, Lord, yes. I say, that's a bit awkward.
Well, if I could stop it myself, I would, but I hardly think I can. Major Fentiman is his grandfather's executor and personally made the application to the Home Office.
Hmm. We'll have to hope the sleuth lets us know where they are, then. No point in going over to look for them. They've probably left Paris by now. I wouldn't be surprised if the elusive Mr. Oliver wasn't halfway to Rome already. When's the exhumation fixed for?
The day after tomorrow.
Ah. It'll be a quiet affair, I take it. No flowers, what?
It will be held under the discreet cover of darkness, as is customary, Lord Peter.
Of course.
We are to be at the cemetery at 6 p.m.
Then I think we might as well go ahead with it, Marbles. After all, it won't make things any worse, will it?
Seem to be having a little trouble unscrewing the coffin lid, Lord Peter.
Yes. That's gruesome, ain't it? Especially with Pemberthy there, spraying formalin like an infernal thurifer at some particularly unwholesome sacrifice. He seems somewhat abstracted this evening, don't you think?
Pemberthy?
Hmm.
I'm not surprised. No doctor who's confidently signed a death certificate welcomes having his judgment challenged a mere 3 weeks later. Ah. They've done it.
Dr. Horner is to do the autopsy, I take it.
Yes, he's a good man, Horner.
Ah, very nice indeed. Excellent. Do you agree, Pemberthy?
Very good, yes.
Put him down here. Yes, yes. Not much difficulty over this job. It's the best of getting on to it at once, what? Mm. Let's see now. Scalpel, please.
There you are.
That's it. Ah, yes, yes, undoubted heart trouble. Yeah. Don't see any unusual appearances, though, do you? I suppose we'd better secure the stomach as it stands. Do you mind holding while I get this ligature on? And... The jar's just behind you there. Thanks. I say, look out, you'll have it over.
Sorry, it's all right, I've got it.
A near thing. I won't take all the liver out, just a sample. Sections of the rest, I suppose. Better have a look at the brain, worry about it, I suppose. Have you got the large saw there? Thanks.
Trifle callous, aren't they?
There's nothing to them. Horner does this kind of job several times a week.
Yes, but he needn't be so noisy. Dr. Pemberthy behaves with decorum.
Yes, but he knew old Fentiman and Horner didn't. Yes, Pemberthy?
We ought to be able to get a pretty good idea of when the old boy died from the contents of the stomach. Decomposition is very little advanced owing to an exceptionally well-made coffin. Ooh, beastly business, this. Do you think I was wrong to give the certificate?
No, of course not. You didn't suspect anything wrong with the death itself. The general was over 90. His heart was bound to go at some point.
Yes. But having a patient dug up always makes me worried, you know. It's easy to make a mistake and one looks an awful fool in court. I'd hate being made to look a fool just at present. I'm thinking...
Pemberthy!
Great Scott, Horner, don't shout like that. You startled me.
Come and sign this.
Oh, yes, sir. Righto, yes, sir. Goodbye, Whimsy. Goodbye, Mr. Mervyn.
Cheerio.
Goodbye.
Horner told me that the analysis will be ready in about a week's time, Mervyn.
That is correct, Lord Peter.
Then I'll see you in about a week. Meanwhile, I am going down to Chelsea.
Chelsea?
Yes. It's a long time since I saw my young friend Marjorie Phelps. She's an artist, Mervyn. Models, pottery, figurines. I need some advice about the world of art.
Lord Peter, how nice to see you. Do come in.
Shan't I be in the way?
Not a scrap. You don't mind if I go on working?
Oh, rather not, no. I say, that's attractive, Marjorie.
No, rather pretty. But it's a special order and one can't afford to be particular. Well, what can I do for you?
You can tell me all you know about Miss Anne Dorland.
Anne Dorland? Great heavens, you haven't fallen for Anne Dorland, have you? I've heard she's come into an awful lot of money.
You have a perfectly disgusting mind, Miss Phelps. I have not fallen for the lady. If I had, I'd manage my affairs without assistance. And she hasn't come into the money yet, either.
Oh, I thought Lady Dormer left a half a million or so.
Well, the old lady made rather a comical will. If her brother, General Fentiman, was still alive when she died, he was to get the bulk of the estate. If he wasn't, it came to Anne Dorland. Now, I've been spending the last fortnight proving that the second of these two is the true bill. At least, nearly proving it. The analysis of the old boy's stomach should make it 100% certain.
I see. And what do you want to know about Anne Dorland?
Well, what's she like?
To look at?
Among other things.
Well, she's rather plain. She has dark, straight hair, cut in a bang across the forehead and bobbed, like a Flemish page.
Mm-hmm.
Her forehead's broad. She has a square sort of face and a straight nose, quite good. Also, her eyes are good, grey, with nice heavy eyebrows, not fashionable a bit. But she has a bad skin and rather sticky out teeth, and she's dumpy.
How very observant. She's a painter, isn't she?
Well, she paints.
I see. A well-off amateur with a studio, what?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Lady Dormer was very decent to her. Gave her a big room in her house and let her do more or less what she liked. She gave parties there, rather incompetently, I'm afraid. Oh, she's never really been one of us. I think, really, she ought to have been something in the city. She has brains, you know. She'd run anything awfully well. But she isn't creative. And then so many of our little lot seem to be running love affairs. And a continual atmosphere of hectic passion is very trying if you haven't got any of your own.
Has Miss Dorland a mind above hectic passion?
Well, no. I dare say she would quite have liked that. But nothing came of it. Why are you so interested in having Anne Dorland analysed?
I'll tell you someday. It ain't just vulgar curiosity. But I say, look here. Suppose I ever wanted to run across her accidentally on purpose, if you follow me. Where should I be likely to find her?
Oh, you do seem thrilled about her. You'd better come with me to the Rushworths' party next week. She's bound to be there. Though when I say party, it'll be pretty deadly. They go in rather for science and improving the submerged tenth and all that. I believe Naomi Rushworth's new young man is going to read a paper on ductless glands.
Ah, yes, they're the latest thing, aren't they?
Oh, yes. They're ever so much more up to date than vitamins. The Rushworths are all over glands, in the social sense, I mean. Come along.
I will, Marjorie, I will indeed. Thank you.
Morning, Mabels.
Lord Peter, good morning to you.
Hark, hark, the lark at heaven's gate sings. He is coming, my own, my sweet. Wear it ever so airy a tread. He will be here any moment now.
Who will?
Robert Fentiman.
Ah, I'd almost given up hope in that direction.
So had not I. I said to myself, he is not last but gone before, and it was so.
But has he returned of his own accord?
Not altogether. He was, if I may so express myself, led. Almost, in fact, led on. Or moor and fen, or crag and torrent, don't you know?
Is Mr. Mervyn's in?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
It is the cannon's opening roar.
Ah, there you are, Wimsey. Morning, Mervyn's. Now, look here, Wimsey. What's the meaning of all this? Here's that damn detective fellow of yours leading me a devil of a dance all over Europe and home again. And then this morning he suddenly turns round and tells me you want to see me here with news about Oliver. What the devil do you know about Oliver?
Oliver? Oh, yes. Yes, he's an elusive personality. Almost as elusive in Paris and Rome as he was in London. Did you have a jolly time abroad, old man? I suppose you didn't like to tell your companion that he and you were chasing a will-o'-the-wisp.
What are you talking about?
Lord Peter, has your detective vouchsafed any explanation of his extraordinary behaviour in keeping us in the dark for over a week as to his and Major Fentiman's movements?
I'm afraid I owe you the explanation, Mervyn's. You see, I thought it was time that the carrot was dangled before the other donkey. I knew that if we pretended to find Oliver in Paris, Fentiman would be in honour bound to chase after him. Because he couldn't really refuse to go without confessing that there was no such person as Oliver. Could you, Major?
Damnation. You cunning little devil.
Do you mean to say that you invented all this story about Oliver, Lord Peter?
The Paris Oliver, yes. I told the sleuth to send a wire from Paris to summon our friend away and keep him away.
But why?
Simple, Mervyn's. To make sure he couldn't stop the exhumation. The stomach analysis was essential, you see. Partly because I wanted absolute proof that the general had died on the evening of the 10th.
Great Scott! Do you know that, too? Yes. I suppose if you had exploded Oliver, you must have spilled all the rest of the beans, eh?
If you mean by that expression, are we aware of your disgraceful attempt at fraud, the answer is yes.
Oh, well. I suppose this means I don't get the $500,000 from the old boy after all. Now you've proved he was dead when Great Aunt Dormer died. I imagine it all goes to the Dorland woman instead.
No.
No?
Of course it does, Lord Peter.
Not necessarily, Mervyn's.
I fail to understand you.
Then listen to this. It's from Dr. Horner. Dear Lord Peter, I'm sending you a line in advance to let you know the result of the autopsy on General Fentiman. As regards the ostensible reason for the investigation, I may say that there was no food in the stomach,
and that the last meal had been taken several hours previously. The important point, however, is that, following your own rather obscurely expressed suggestion, I tested the viscera for foreign substances and discovered traces of a powerful dose of digitalin, swallowed not very long previous to decease. As you know, the subject whose heart was already in a weak state, the result of such a dose could not but be fatal, and there is no doubt that the general was deliberately poisoned. I have consequently communicated my findings to the public prosecutor, yours, etc., etc., etc.
You mean he was murdered?
Yes, Fentiman. He was murdered. Inspector Parker of Scotland Yard is now in charge of the case, and if I may say so, it is extremely lucky for you that you had a good bit to lose by the old man's death.
Damn good, old man.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you. I'm glad the police appreciate me, at least.
Well, what put you onto this poison idea?
Aristotle, chiefly. He says that one should always prefer the probable impossible to the improbable possible. Now, it was possible, of course, that the general should have died off in that neat way at the most confusing moment, but how much nicer and more probable that the whole thing had been stage-managed.
Yeah.
And then there was the Dorland woman's behaviour. Why was she so dead against compromising on the will? She must have had inside information from somewhere.
Well, that leads on to the question of who did it. Miss Dorland's the obvious suspect, naturally.
She was the only person who stood to benefit from the ill boy predeceasing Lady Dormer.
Yes. Well, let's be methodical. Now, the general was apparently as right as rain until about 3:30 on the afternoon of the 10th, when he started off for his sister's house. So the drug must have been given him between then and whenever it was that Robert Fentiman found him dead.
About 8.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, who saw him between those two times?
Well, wait a minute. Wait a second. Look, this ain't entirely accurate. What? He must have taken the stuff between those two times, but it might have been given to him earlier.
Ah.
I mean, suppose, for instance, somebody dropped a poison pill into his usual bottle of soda mints or whatever he used to take.
All right. Well, who would have had the opportunity to do that?
Well, Pemberthy, for one.
Yes, well, you stick him down as a possible, although he wouldn't have had the slightest motive. Still, we'll put him in the column headed opportunity.
That's right, Charles. I do like your methodical ways.
It's an attraction of opposites. Opportunity number one, Dr. Pemberthy. Right, who's next? Miss Dorland.
Yes. Now, she goes down under opportunity and motive. She certainly had a big interest in polishing off the old man. And she saw him when he came to see Lady Dormer, and very likely gave him something to eat or drink. So she's a very likely suspect. The only difficulty with her is the problem of getting hold of the drug. You can't get digitalin just by asking for it, you know.
No. No, at least not by itself. You can get it mixed up with other drugs quite easily. I saw an ad in the Daily Views only this morning offering a pill with half a grain of digitalin in it.
Yes, but that'll have Nux Vomica in it too, I expect, which is an antidote.
Well, couldn't they be separated?
Well, I think it would require some fairly fancy chemical equipment, Charles. And Anne Dorland is an artist, don't forget, not a scientist.
Ah, well, we'll put Miss Dorland down under means with a query mark, then. Oh, and of course, Pemberthy has to go down under means, too. He's the one person who could get the stuff without any bother.
Righty-ho. Now, who's next? The servants at Lady Dormer's.
All right.
Well, any of them who brought him food and drink, at any rate.
Yes, they might have been in collusion with Miss Dorland. All right. Anyone else? I presume we can cross Robert Fentiman off. But what about Brother George? He saw his grandfather that afternoon, so he had the opportunity.
And he'd have to go down under motive as well.
Motive?
Hmm.
Or should he not? What did he stand to gain by Miss Dorland's getting the legacy?
Oh, nothing if he knew about it, but I don't think he did. And he was in debt, remember, and Dougal McStuart, the money-lending chappy, was being rather pressing. The general's death meant George would immediately step into 2,000 quid.
Well, that's quite right. Well, down he goes under motive, then. Now, is there any name which appears in all three columns of our list? No. But several appear in two. Well, we'd better start on those. Miss Dorland, I think's the most obvious. I'll have a round-up among all the chemists who may possibly have supplied her with digitalin. Who's her family doctor?
Donaire, that's your pigeon.
Hmm.
Oh, by the way, Charles, I'm supposed to be meeting the girl at a cocoa party or something of the sort tomorrow evening.
Yeah? Well?
Well, you won't pinch her before then, if you can help it, will you?
I'll introduce you to Mrs. Rushworth, Peter, and then I'll have to go and talk to Naomi about her young man.
You're going to leave me, Marjorie?
Have to, I'm afraid. I'm supposed to be a friend of Naomi's. I must show an interest. Mrs. Rushworth, this is Lord Peter Wimsey.
How do you do?
Good evening, Mrs. Rushworth. Thank you so much for allowing me to come along.
Delighted to see you.
Lord Peter is fearfully keen on glands and things, Mrs. Rushworth.
Who
are you? Oh, it's wonderful, isn't it? Dr. Voronoff, you know, and those marvellous old sheep. Such a hope for all of us. Not that dear Walter is specially interested in rejuvenation.
Walter?
Naomi's intended.
Oh, really? How delightful.
Yes. He says life is long and difficult enough as it is. I think he's so right. And the insurance companies have quite set their faces against it, or so I understand. But the effect on character is so interesting, you know. Are you devoted to young criminals, by any chance?
Well, they present a very perplexing problem.
How very true. So perplexing. And just to think that we've been quite wrong about them all these thousands of years. Flogging and bread and water, you know, and Holy Communion, when what they really needed was a little bit of rabbit gland or something to make them just as good as gold. Quite terrible, isn't it? It'll be such a joy for Naomi to be able to help dear Walter in this great work. I hope you will feel eager to subscribe to the establishment of the new clinic.
What new clinic?
Oh, hasn't Marjorie told you about it? The new clinic to make everybody good by glands. That is what dear Walter's going to speak about this evening. He's so keen, and so is Naomi. It was such a joy to me when Naomi told me they were really engaged, you know. Not that her old mother hadn't suspected something, of course, but young people are so odd nowadays, and they keep their affairs so much to themselves.
Yes, they do, don't they?
And now, if you will excuse me if I run off and speak to some other people, won't you? I'm sure you'll be able to amuse yourself. No doubt you have many friends in my little gathering.
Well, no, I don't think that... Well, yes. Good heavens, there's Dr. Pemberthy.
Dear Walter! Walter, I couldn't think what had kept you, you know.
Pemberthy? Good Lord.
A very sound man. Don't think the worse of his work from seeing him in this crowd. Beggars in a good cause can't be choosers, as we parsons know too well.
Father Whittington, isn't it? From the Bermondsey Mission.
The same. You're Lord Peter Wimsey, I know.
Indeed.
We've got an interest in crime in common, haven't we? I'm interested in this glandular theory.
Mm-hmm.
It may throw a great light on some of our heartbreaking problems.
Well, I'm glad to see there's no antagonism between religion and science.
Of course not. Why should there be? We're all searching for truth. Hello, here's Pemberthy, looking for you, I fancy.
Ah.
Well, Dr. Pemberthy, I've come, you see, to hear you make mincemeat of original sin.
That's very open-minded of you. Excuse me one moment.
Oh, yes, certainly.
I say, Wimsey, you've heard all about Horner's analysis, I suppose?
Yes, bit of a startler, ain't it?
It's going to make things damnably awkward for me, Wimsey. Among other things... I gave General Fentiman a small prescription for digitalin that afternoon. Oh, nothing like the dose that was found in the body. That was enormous, nearly 2 grains. But I did give him some.
To stimulate his heart?
Yes. He was having extreme difficulty breathing. I've told Inspector Parker, of course, and we've been over my books and chemist receipts together. Fortunately, there is no possibility of my having made a mistake.
Then what are you worried about?
My faulty diagnosis.
Oh, my dear chap, you were hardly to blame. You were expecting the old boy to pop off from heart, and he did pop off from heart, more or less.
Yes, but will a jury see it that way? It really couldn't have happened at a more unfortunate time.
Oh, it'll blow over, Pemberthy. That sort of mistake happens 100 times a week. By the way, I gather I'm to congratulate you. When did this get settled? You've been very quiet about it.
Oh, I was starting to tell you at that infernal exhumation business only somebody barged in. Yes, thanks very much. We fixed it up, about a fortnight or 3 weeks ago. Ah. You've met Naomi, sweet girl.
No, I haven't, not yet. My friend Miss Phelps carried her off.
Oh, you must come and talk to her later then.
Walter!
Oh, Lord. I think they're waiting for me to begin. See you afterwards.
Look, half a jiff. Look, I really came here. Oh, no, dash it, that's rude. But I'd no idea that you were the lector till I spotted you, do you see? I originally came here... Yes, that sounds better. To get a look at Miss Dorland of Fentiman fame. Can you tell me what she is?
I know her to speak to. I haven't seen her this evening. She may not turn up, you know.
Well, isn't she keen on glands, then?
I believe she is, or thinks she is. Anything does for these women as long as it's new, especially if it's sexual. By the way, I don't intend to be sexual.
Oh, well, bless you for that. Well, possibly Miss Dorland will show up later.
Perhaps.
Ah, here's Marjorie.
Excuse me, then, won't you?
Yes, of course. Well, Marjorie, have you seen Miss Dorland?
No, she hasn't turned up, I'm afraid.
Anything wrong?
Just Naomi Rushworth. I cannot like that girl, Peter. She hints things.
What particularly?
Well, I started to ask about Anne, and she said she wasn't coming. So I said, oh, why? And she said she wasn't well.
Yes?
Well, then she said, of course, that's only an excuse. She probably doesn't feel like facing people today. The implication being, of course, that Anne's kept away because she's scared everyone will think she killed General Fentiman.
Good Lord. Does everybody here think that?
Yes, because of her chemistry experiments, you see.
Ladies and gentlemen... please, could you please find somewhere to sit? We are about to start.
Marjorie, what chemical experiments? I thought Miss Dorland was a painter.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Walter Pevensey.
Yes, she was. But a few months ago, she went off art a bit. She's now got quite a little laboratory set up at Lady Dormer's instead.
Good Lord.
In that episode of The Unpleasantness of the Bologna Club, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael. Robert Fentiman, Alan Cuthbertson. Inspector Parker, Gabriel Wolfe. Mr. Merbles, John Gabriel. Dr. Penberthy, Christopher Emmett. Dr. Horner and Father Whittington, Blaine Fairman. Marjorie Phelps, Rosalind Adams. Mrs. Rushworth, Olwyn Griffiths. Exhumation was adapted by Chris Miller from the book The Unpleasantness of the Bologna Club by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.